things are certain about Ron Paolucci. His enthusiasm for the sport is unsurpassed, and he thinks outside the box. That's why it comes as no surprise that not only will he partake for the second straight year in the Grade 1 Pegasus World Cup, but he has two entrants, War Story and Sharp Azteca. Sometimes controversial, never dull, Paolucci is this week's guest on the Thoroughbred Daily News podcast. This is Bill Finley, the host of the TDN podcast, and we're pleased to be joined this week by owner Ron Paolucci. Ron, I have to admit, every time I try to figure out the machinations of how and why you wound up with two slots in the Pegasus, I actually get a little bit confused. So why don't you just explain how this all worked?
Well, what happened is I originally was buying a spot with Game Over in mind. That's one of my four or five top horses that I have. He had developed a foot abscess prior to the Malibu. Malibu was going to be the prep for the Pegasus. With that being unsure, and with having partners in War Story, I was in negotiations with the Stronach group to put War Story in their spot because the deal that they came up with didn't have us putting up any money to run. So if you're going to be a little bit longer shot in the field, I would rather risk no money and put up and have the same, you know, the same, be able to get close to the same amount of money back with risking zero. So we got very fortunate to be in one of those spots. So now throw in the fact that Sharp Azteca was looking for a spot, and I got creative with putting them in my spot. And so I talked to George Navarro and Ivan, the owner, and Martin Sharp, the owner of Sharp Azteca, and we worked out a deal to go in the spot that I purchased.
Okay.
So that's kind of how it came about.
So let's look at, this is obviously about winning a horse race, but it's also about dollars and cents, and a lot of dollars and cents when you're talking about $16 million. From a sheer financial standpoint, what's the best outcome for you?
Sharp Azteca is the best outcome for me from a sheer financial standpoint because I own 100% of the slot, and I only own 45% of War Story. So with the deal that I made with the owners of Sharp Azteca, financially I come out better with Sharp Azteca if he wins. But believe me, I will be watching and rooting for War Story as a, you know, that's been my baby since the day I bought him, you know, after his first start. So even though there's more monetary value with Sharp Azteca, I would much rather see War Story cross the line first. And still a great payday. So it's not like one is, you know, one is $20 million and one's, you know, $200,000. I'm rooting for the $200,000. There, it's close enough to where I would forego the money to have my actual horse win the race.
It's Sharp Azteca with the lead. Mind Your Biscuits into second. As they come down for the finish, it's Sharp Azteca, and he was sharp as can be today to win the Cigar Mile.
You just heard Sharp Azteca winning his last start, the Cigar Mile. While he won around two turns in the past, his specialty is a one-turn mile. And Ron, he's never won at a mile and an eighth. So I know while you don't own him per se, obviously, you want a good outcome with him. Do you think distance is a concern for him in the Pegasus at all?
You know, I don't think, the reason I don't think so is I think that they learned something about that horse. After the Breeders' Cup mile this year, he's not a horse going two turns that you want to rush off his feet. I think that they're probably going to deploy a little bit of a different strategy. And I don't have any insight as to this yet because obviously I don't own the horse, but if you look at the races where Sharp Azteca hasn't come out of the gate gunning, he's run better races. I mean, the race at Monmouth going two turns was unbelievably good. His last race in the Cigar Mile, he sat off of it. It was one turn, but he wasn't quarter horsed out to the gate. And I think that's why George wanted Javier and Irad, somebody with more experience, a little bit more patience in these bigger races, not to just be, let me just use his speed and be on the lead. If you watch him train, that horse is not trained like a sprinter. He gets quicker each quarter, each eighth that he trains. So don't think he absolutely needs to lead in that race. He doesn't.
Ron, last year, of course, you ran War Story in the Pegasus and did not recoup your $1 million. I don't know about all the last dollars and cents, but I assume it was a loss of money. It's pretty safe to say that. Most of the shareholders, as a matter of fact, I believe all but you, who went in last year and lost money, did not come back for this year's Pegasus. Now, not only are you back, you're back with two horses, and you've even expressed some interest about still running Game Over, which would make you have involvement with three horses in the race. So what makes Ron Paolucci so bullish on the Pegasus World Cup?
Well, it is the richest race in the world. I mean, the richest race to ever be run, is unless somebody tells me different. And, you know, if you're a guy that tries to play at the largest level, you know, this is obviously the largest level. So you want to try to win the race. There's a lot of prestige that goes along with it, a lot of, you know, big money that goes along with it. And in the case of War Story, he needs a good showing to go to Dubai for the World Cup. With no gun runner there, Baffert probably not sending both of his horses. If he runs a good third in this race, he's probably, with stretching back to a mile and a quarter with that long stretch, if he's not the favorite, he's probably the second favorite for $10 million. So for War Story, it's more of a stepping stone. You know, a mile and an eighth against these type of horses, let's not kid ourselves, that's not his optimal distance. He's a deep, you know, methodical closer who doesn't have a huge turn of foot, but he's a stayer. So, and with the way that Dubai does their, how they extend invitations, you have to have such a form rating that to get an invitation. So I thought it was important to put him in this race, let him get a good showing, make sure we get the invite to Dubai, give him the time he needs between races. And so for him, it's like a two-prong thing. As far as, you know, my spot with Sharp Azteca, that's strictly a financial situation to where, you know, I already put up $350,000. I wasn't sure if I wanted to run Game Over, so I got the best available horse to try to recoup or make money with. And, you know, if he runs first, second, or third, I make money. If he runs fourth, I lose a little bit. If he runs fifth, I lose a little bit more. And then the rest of them, I lose all of it. So, you know, I thought, my guess is, with off of 115 buyer, he's probably the second favorite. So if I got the second favorite to try to recoup my money, I just figured that was the best investment I could make.
Sure, sure. Now, Ron, last year, War Story was 49-1 in the Pegasus, 56-1 in the Breeders' Cup Classic, where he certainly didn't embarrass himself running fourth. And it's fair to say that more so than anyone else in this sport, you don't mind running big long shots in the big races. As a matter of fact, you seem to relish the opportunity. So why is that your strategy? Take us through your thinking.
Well, I'd rather have a 3-5 shot, but I don't. My strategy isn't to have a 49-1 shot or a 56-1 shot. But, you know, a lot of people look at me and they'll say, oh, man, the guy's a big player in the game. But I've got to do it on a beer budget. You know, I've got to buy horses for $275,000, which I'm sure your listeners are going, oh, yeah, I feel bad for him. But when you're trying to play with the Judmonts and the Stronachs and the Klaroviches and the, you know, China Horse Clubs and Pickett Windstars. I mean, these people have unlimited budgets. They spend 20, 30, 40, 50 million a year. I spend a fraction of that. So that's probably why my horses are, you know, 25, 35, 40 to one, because, you know, I'm buying horses for 200,000 where they're buying horses for 2 million. So I've got to be creative. I've got to be inventive. And I think I've actually calmed myself down quite a bit. You don't see me running as many crazy places as I used to. I've been to all the big dances now. I like to have at least a realistic chance. And I think War Story has a fighter's chance with five speeds in that race. And if you look at his Breeders' Cup Classic, they ran around, the top three ran around like, you know, like trained pigs. They did, nobody closed except for my horse. And he did it from far, far, far back. Got beat a half a length to West Coast, 2 lengths to Collected, and, you know, 4 lengths to Gunrunner, the greatest horse in the world. So I think he's deserving. I still think he'll be 25 or 30 to one in this spot, depending on the draws, but he's a live 25 or 30 to one based on the pace. So I don't run him at that high odds because I want to. That just happens to be where my budget allows most of the time.
Rhea Antonia with a strong upset chance, and up the fence, Sweet Reason has kicked it in late. She's a Tiger, Rhea Antonia, Sweet Reason, and even Rosalind is coming on from the back of the field. They're coming to the finish, and it is a game and determined. She's a Tiger who finishes on the wire with Rhea Antonia.
Well, what you just heard was the 2013 Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, and this time Ron Paolucci's Luch Racing Stable struck gold with a long shot, 32-1 Rhea Antonia, who was placed first through disqualification. And Ron, simply put, let's just ask the basic question. Describe the thrill. Describe that moment.
Honestly, the greatest thrill, the greatest moment you could probably ever experience. And I say this, and people don't believe it, but it's true. I did not come off cloud nine until February. And I know that because I remember when I came off cloud nine, the day she ran back at the fairgrounds and got her butt kicked by Asmussen's good filly, Untappable, I think was her name. And, you know, when you win a race like that, you think of all the things you can think of. Can I go to the Kentucky Derby? Can I win the Oaks? You know, I've got a grade one filly here, and I'm doing, and I mean, it's just, you know, everybody's calling you. Everybody's high-fiving you. You know, you get to go to the big party afterwards, and everybody wants to know how you did it. And, you know, that was only my second full year in the business when I did that. And I stuck to my guns with Rhea Antonia. Nobody believed me. TVG didn't believe me. My friends didn't believe me. Nobody believed me. But I believed in myself and the horse. And, you know, I put up all the money, didn't ask my partners for anything. And you know, I'm big on if I get something in my mind to do it. And I did it.
Okay. And again, a typical story for Ron Paolucci. That was a long shot that virtually everybody thought didn't have any chance. And yet you win one of the biggest races run during the year for any sex, any age, et cetera. There's nothing bigger than the Breeders' Cup. Ron, in some sense, did that empower this way of thinking? Is this what led to all this? You know, I'm going to be the guy that's going to shoot for the moon.
No, I think that's my personality. Whether she would have won or got beat 40 lengths, I think that I wouldn't change who I am or how I approach the game or life. It's just, it's my mentality. You know, I'm a fierce competitor. You know, I won 172 races last year as an owner, so I think I did a few things right. Some of my horses were ambitiously placed, but each year I find myself placing them less ambitiously because it's, you know, when you look at it, you've got to at least have a method to your madness. You know, with fillies or mares, sometimes it's about the broodmare value. You know, with War Story, he now is kind of putting himself where he belongs because he's a gelding. You know, do I really want to throw good money after bad with him? No. So, you know, it's like anything else. As I've been in the sport longer, I kind of learn what battles I want to try to pick. And, you know, people will be like, well, why'd you run War Story against Gunrunner twice? Because it was a small field. I was guaranteed to make money, and if I ran second, I made $150,000. So, you know, a lot of it is placement by money value. It's not always about winning in this sport. You want to win, but sometimes you got to take $100,000 for running second in the short field. People don't look at that, you know.
Sure. Now, the payday with Rhea Antonia continued as you sold her for $1.8 million at the 2014 Fasig Tipton Fall Mixed Sale. Does that mean you're not interested in breeding, Ron?
I have my own. I have my own breeding operation. I've got a few yearlings. Well, now they're two. I've got a few 2-year-olds that I bred myself. That was a case where I had partners on the horse, and I only owned 50% of the horse. And they kind of dictated that we sold her. I actually bid myself up to $1.5 million on her. I wanted to run her as a 4-year-old. I didn't want to sell her. I soon found out I was bidding against, I think, the prime minister or the financial minister of Japan that owns, whoever owns Deep Impact. And he wasn't going to take, if I'd have known that, I'd kept bidding, because he wasn't stopping. But that's not a bidding war I was going to win.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, I wanted to race her as a 4-year-old. I thought she was going to get better and better and better. But that's what happens when you have partners. You're kind of at their mercy.
Sure. Now, Ron, as you well know, not everybody necessarily approves of some of your strategies. And that includes Breeders' Cup officials who wouldn't let you run the first-time starter, or what would have been a first-time starter at that point, Heaven Loves My Nikki, in the Juvenile Fillies. And you've been asked this a lot, but just your general thoughts on that situation and whether or not you really think that was unfair.
Well, I think I'm going to answer this in two ways. I 100% think it was unfair. Okay. But hindsight being 2020, was it the best thing for my filly? Absolutely. She's a quality filly. You know, I think the world of her. I didn't think so much of the fillies this year. I thought watching her train, knowing that she wants to run all day, I thought the risk reward of running her was worth it. She was sound. She was doing good. And I just didn't believe in any of the fillies that were running. This was a very weak group of 2-year-old fillies. Not like the year I ran Rhea Antonia. That was the toughest. Jeff Treadway's horse, Michael Hushin's horse, you know, Baffert had a nice one. The Jeff Bondi filly, there was legit, unbelievably good, well-bred. You know, those two New York fillies ran, 98, 99 buyers in the Frisette going into the, you know, this year you're looking at fillies that were running 68s and 69s and 70s. So if this had been a typical year, I wouldn't even have thought about it. But I just thought, listen, if this filly goes out and runs like she trains, and I know she wants to run all day, she's a big, long striding filly, that it would be an absolute home run. So I absolutely 100% think it was unfair. But hindsight being 2020, I think it did me, the horse, my trainer, everybody a favor by not running her. So, I mean, at least I'm man enough to admit that while I think she should have run, I'm happy that they made the decision they did and she didn't run.
Here's Heaven Has My Nikki, roused toward the inside to get to Tony Ann's Miracle, who digs deep. Tony Ann's Miracle, Heaven Has My Nikki one more time. These two, Heaven Has My Nikki, surging. Heaven Has My Nikki won it. It's a very nice win for Heaven Has My Nikki under Tyler Gaffleon in 1 of 10 and 4.
Well, you just heard one of the reasons why Ron is so happy with the way this turned out. That very same horse, Heaven Loves My Nikki, is now 2 for 2 after winning an allowance race January 15th at Gulfstream Park, overcoming a tough trip. And Ron, it is water under the bridge, and you've sort of said that, but nonetheless, you feel a little bit vindicated now that your horse has at the very least shown that she's good enough to win a Gulfstream allowance.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel vindicated, especially the way she did it. I mean, you got to remember this filly was coming off a 3-month layoff. She broke slow, spotted the field. She rushed up into slow fractions. Luis Saez knocked her sideways at the half mile pole. Jose Ortiz pushed her down into the rail, you know, turning for home. She came inside of a pedestrian pace and got up in 110. I mean, absolutely, I think. And she, you know, we know she wants to go further. So that's the whole thing. You know, it's just her stride's a very, very long stride. You know, you got to love horses that show the ability to want to win like she did, because she had every reason not to win today.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ron, the filly is obviously talented. We know that she is able to win at this level. But let's go back again one more time to the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, you're not a blue blood. You're not a member of the jockey club. You're a guy from Akron, Ohio. Your trainer with that filly is a virtual unknown, at least at the highest level. Do you think they would have made the same decision if perhaps Coolmore and Aidan O'Brien said, we're going to run a first-time starter in the Breeders' Cup?
100%. They would not have made the same decision. If Todd Pletcher, Aidan O'Brien, Bob Baffert, pick whoever you want, in Judmont Farms, entered a first-time starter in the Breeders' Cup, and like I told Craig Travel, the Breeders' Cup, now that I tried to do it, don't think that somebody else isn't going to do it with a horse that's training out of their mind that a race comes up too close to the Breeders' Cup, and they want to take a chance. And don't be surprised if they allow that horse to come in. It won't, you know, in my whole thinking is, just because it's never been done doesn't mean it couldn't, shouldn't, mm-hmm. or won't be done. And, you know, if somebody's crazy enough to put up $60,000 to run a horse, this is America. Last time I checked, put up your money, put the saddle on and run the horse. I mean, that's what makes our country so great. You know, this isn't Russia. We're not dictators, you know, you know, it's just, to me, it was highly prejudicial based on myself owning the horse and my trainer, who, like you said, is not, you know, a well-known Todd Pletcher type guy. He's been around a long time and does a great job, but he doesn't have Bob Baffert's name, mm-hmm. you know, attached to, you know, he's a Paisan like me, to a Pellucci and a Corderola. What chance we got of getting a fair shake?
There you go. Now, very similar situation occurred when you tried to run a claimer in the Woodward by the name of May B as a rabbit for War Story. And once again, the powers that be said, no, you cannot do this. Would your answer be the same thing that, you know, while it might have been a different way to approach the race, maybe not what other stables would do, it was unfair and prejudicial that they just didn't let you go ahead and do it?
Yeah. Again, same premise as the Breeders' Cup. I mean, people have been running rabbits their whole life. My only thing was I told the truth and I would do it again, even though it helped my, you know, it completely hurt my horse in that race, the way that race set up, not being able to run. I mean, it killed War Story, but if they ask me again, what is your intention to run the horse? I'm going to tell them the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not changing my opinion to help my cause. You know, first and foremost, I love horse racing. I love the sport. I'll play within the rules. I'm not going to do something that undermines what I believe for anybody or anyone or any amount of money. And that's what they wanted me to do. And I wasn't going to answer them. I wasn't going to tell them what they wanted to hear just so I could run my horse. Mm-hmm. It's not who I am. It's not who I want to be. And I'll never be that guy. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it just people now will do it differently. They'll enter them in other people's names, like certain trainers have done, and still do the same thing. So,
now, Ron, most of the horses that you've had success with, including Riantoni, are horses that you've bought privately after their racing careers have begun. And again, you've had a lot of success with that. So just generally tell us what your strategy is. What do you look for when you try to acquire a racehorse?
I look for outs, okay? And what I mean by that is if I'm going to buy a horse, I need to have some kind of way to try to get my money back because I don't have unlimited money. So, you know, any purchase for me, $100,000 or less, I generally try to have somewhere where I can run to get my money back, whether that's conditions, 2 life, 3 life, 4 life allowance at my home track in Ohio or some kind of conditions. You know, when you go above that, now you're talking about a horse has to be a state caliber horse. I don't buy that many of those types of horses on a yearly basis, a handful, 5 maybe, you know, which is all my budget allows, but when I'm buying horses for $175, $65, or claiming in that same thing, I'm looking for outs. I got to get out. You know, and that's the one thing about me. When I claim at Gulfstream, if they don't make it, I can send them to Ohio and know that I can run through those conditions and at least get a good portion of my money back. So that's how I play the game.
Now, Ron, you've talked a lot throughout this conversation very generally about the dollars and cents and the bottom line. Most people approach horse racing, I shouldn't say most people, but a lot of people, particularly that play at the higher level, look at it more as a hobby, something that they enjoy. And a lot of people are okay with losing money. First of all, does your stable make money? Are you turning a profit?
Yeah. I mean, I have to make money at it. I'm not, you know, I keep saying this, I'm not an independently wealthy guy. I mean, I've got a lot of people I support. I've got a huge stable. You know, 100, 125 horses. And when I first got in the game, I got my rear end kicked. And I figured out that I need to keep 70 to 75% of my horses in Ohio where the cost is very low. The, you know, the vet bills are very low and the purses are very good based on what my day rate is. And then I take the other 25% and I go to the bigger tracks like Gulfstream, Aqueduct. And if I reversed it, I'd be on the soup line. I couldn't afford it. It's just, you know, not only is it higher prices, but the competition's better, and then you got to spend more money. I try to do it from a perspective to where the worst case scenario is my 75% break even for the 25%. Mm-hmm. Last year I had a very, very good year between the horses I own in partnership and my own horses. I think I 5.9 million in purses and 172 wins. And my larger horses like Imperative and Game Over and War Story produced, you know, Mo Don't Know, my very good Ohio bred, made almost $500,000. So my good horses did very well, and last year was a good year.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ron, people in horse racing, people that will be listening to this know all about many of the things we've been talking about. They know about War Story. They know about Riantonio, et cetera. But we don't know much about you as an individual. I know you grew up in Ohio. I know you're in your late 40s. But just the same question I asked so many people. How did this all start? How did you get interested in horse racing?
I got interested in it when I was old enough to walk. I mean, my grandfather was at Thistledown. And then you know, we go to Thistledown during the day and Waterford Park at night. I grew up as a kid loving it. You know, every chance I get, I went. You know, my other friends were playing kick the can. I went to the racetrack with my dad, you know, and my dad and my grandfather. And I always dreamed of owning horses. And I must have hit a race, I think, originally. And I took that money and I actually bought a trotter first, a horse called Dial's Deal. Won his first three races. I bought another trotter called I Know What Boys Like. And she won her first four or five races. And I ventured out into thoroughbreds, claimed the horse for $2,500. She went on to win 8 of 9 races. And I just, from there, kind of every time I won a race, I bought a horse. And, you know, obviously then the whole Rhea Antonia thing, which, you know, between what she made, what I made betting and selling her, it's just, it kind of snowballed into 120 horses. So that's a quick overview of how I got started into it.
Okay. Well, I always love these stories. How much did you bet on her?
On Rhea Antonia, contrary to popular opinion and in what was written in the newspaper, I made like $700,000 net on the race. There was a few articles that said I made $1 million or $1.2 million, which I didn't.
Okay. So that's
$700,000 is what I netted.
That's the purse plus whatever you bet then.
No. That's just what I bet.
Oh,
the
my
purse
goodness.
I made $923,000, I think, was my end.
Wow. Congratulations. That's a nice story. Quite a score at the windows. And Ron, what is your business outside of racing?
Right now I just do consulting. That's pretty much it. This, you know, when you got 125 horses, it takes up 90% of your time. So, and so that's a lot of horses to manage. And like I said, it's pretty profitable. I've done well with my money investing it. So I'm just investing it in the horses.
Okay, and what business do you consult in?
Temporary staffing.
Okay, very good.
Temporary staffing.
And Ron, we keep harping on this thing, same theme. And you know, you obviously are a sensible guy. It's great to hear that you're making money. But again, you know, you said called yourself a paisan from Akron, Ohio. You're certainly not a blue blood. You've run up against the establishment a couple times with the Breeders' Cup and the Woodward, the two examples where they wouldn't let you run your horses. I imagine you don't really care about what people think about you. Is that the case?
You couldn't have said it more straight. I don't care what anybody thinks about me. I'm going to do what I want to do and how I want to do it and what I believe is right. And what I, you know, and you know, the thing that kills me about it is I don't understand status quo. If somebody asks you a question, why not answer them? You know, how's your horse doing? He's doing okay. Where's your next step? I don't know. I'll have to see how they come out of the race. No, 99% of the people know when your horse wins, where you're going next. I mean, you know, how's your horse doing? You know, okay. I mean, I just, if you know an answer, why not give it? I mean, right. what is